And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Wario Will.
Ah, jeez Louise, just fighting against Steve is such a pain. I mean, all his moves more or less just like how many frames? Just that lava pit, oh my god, and especially walling off recoveries. Jeez, he is toxic. But at least I have my very cute little me costume of Travis Touchdown.
Oh, sure. Now you have Fury. Well, when I wanted it last
I'm not
week.
Mad. I am sad. There's a distinct difference.
Right. All right. And someone who kind of has Fury now is Tellius Tyler.
I am excited that Will tried Steve out, though. I thought I was going to be the only one. So this is good. We can have some discussion on it.
Well, I honestly have I this is a sad admission for me, but I haven't played Smash Brothers since I think Hero came out. Like I played it when Joker was there because I tried him out a few times, but I have not played any of the other first pass Fighter Pass characters because I just haven't gotten back into Smash Brothers. And I haven't bought Fighter Pass 2 yet for obvious reasons. So, yeah. I'm not gonna cop blame to that.
I played as Min Min, but I must have been on a friend's because when I booted up my copy, it said Min Min has arrived, and that was a real shocking moment that I hadn't played Smash on my own Switch in 3 months.
Yeah. See, what we need to do is get back together and play like we used to, but some people just haven't come around to do that. Because I've tried. I've tried to get us back together. So.
I am always looking to play Smash. That's
okay. Then let's do it this weekend.
Well, I mean, not this weekend. I'm kidding. I'm down.
All right. Well, we honestly do have an interesting show for you today. So let's get all started off with what have you been playing? I have been playing things. I honestly have. So I finally got a break in my work schedule, which was then taken away from me. But while I had it, I honestly did go and play Three Houses. I think I'm on the last level now of Silver Snow. So I am so close. So close. And it is interesting seeing the subtle differences between everything. And spoilers, but you know, it's been like a year and a half.
It's been a long time, yeah.
It's been a long time. The spoiler tag is gone. In Silver Snow, one of the things that happens is after you defeat those who are still there in the dark in Shambhala, Rhea gets like critically injured, and so now it's like everyone's looking to you to be the leader, and they had like a really great cutscene of Rhea trying to destroy the railgun. Okay, I gotta talk about this, and I think we've talked about it a little bit before, but what the heck was that weapon? All right, because it's basically an orbital railgun, right? Like the ones.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
It because if you look at it, it looks like missiles. It even has like engravings on it, and it's like, how were they able to make this weapon? Because it's implied that it's futuristic, because it even has like the whole sci-fi orbital guidance system of rings. And I'm like, the heck is this? How did they make this? That's not explained, and that ticks me off. And I've played all four runs. They have not explained how that railgun works. Okay? So, like that... Do you guys have any ideas? Because that just... It honestly just felt out of place.
It's saying something. Well, I mean, all of those who slither in the dark stuff kind of feels out of place. Like, where you fight them is like this metallic arena where, like, it's like very futuristic. So I think it's just like, don't question it, you know, it's futuristic tech. Just accept that it's futuristic tech and move, because even the music there is weird. It's like a metal track.
Yeah, it was.
Very not Fire Emblem-y.
And they have like those lightning Tesla coils, like that shoot you. So yeah, that's kind of out there. But it's just it felt weird. I've always been bothered by that. But anyway, so it's just funny seeing like Rhea so injured and everything, and you know, like you're gonna have to lead the nation. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever.
So, well, are you, though? I mean, chapter, it's like...
I have not finished. I still have that final chapter, so there could be a plot twist or two. But also, as I've noted, I am totally going to marry Happy in... So, I mean, it was either her or...
Constance,
and I
it should have been Constance.
I can't stand Constance. I cannot stand her at all. All right? They don't explain her split personalities.
They don't.
They do not. And I was waiting. I was like, okay, there's like a story moment here. It's like with Happy and her Sigh, And it's like, okay, there she was experimented on, and that's what happened there. But no, then she's just like, oh yeah, I act this way in the sunlight. It burns me so badly. And then she's all happy and here that I'm gonna bring back Hasnuvel and everything, and you shall be part of my house. I'm like, no. Absolutely not. Be gone, woman. So anyway.
I'll give them, she's coming from her family was destroyed and all that, so I'd imagine there's some psychological damage in there. And it's not as well explained, or no, really explained at all compared to other characters in the game.
I would accept that if it was like a regular split personality disorder, which I can totally sympathize with. But like, if it was like she had, when her house was destroyed or something and she was taken away for refuge or something, like, I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah.
And like, it was a bright sunny day and she could see the sun behind her house as it was being destroyed or something, like something symbolic like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And it's like, she, of course, and so mentally the sun is her enemy, and it makes her feel depressed because that's what happened to her house. If it was something like that, then I'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's just, no, it's the sun. It burns me.
The
and
sun.
It's like, I hope you can forgive me. And then it's like just a, it's
she's
back
so
in the
funny.
Dark. Like, I don't need your forgiveness. So it's, ugh. And they even acknowledge in one point that she can control it and she understands her personality differences, because in her A support with Balthus.
Yuri.
With Balthus, in the sunlight, he asked her to join him, or he asked her to join him, you know, to go around the country and just have fun and be in a relationship or whatever. And she goes, "Will you follow me inside?" And he goes, "Yeah, sure, whatever." And they go inside, and she rips him a new one because obviously she's got her, you know, regular personality back. So she clearly understands what's going on here. So I don't know. Also, I totally ship Shamir and Catherine. I did not get to do ape support with them at all before this run, and they totally even say they're going to get married, which is another thing I noted in the past that I don't like, that they say in their ape supports, "Oh yeah, I'll totally marry you," and then like they don't,
yeah,
because of like, you know, who they support in actual battles. I'm like, why would you say that in the ape support and yet they don't get married? That doesn't make sense. So anyway, I'm making sure that they get together though, and right now I should be clear on that. But they're adorable together, obviously. So I hopefully will finish that soon. I don't know when, because work just is unrelenting. But I've been playing that, and of course, Heroes. I've been doing the Tempest Trials.
Yes.
And I reiterate my complaint about how at times it's just almost too difficult if you don't have the right team. Because I had a feeling that I would need some Dragon Killer, so I put Alm in there, who I have, honestly, a good level on and skills and all that. And there are times that I'll have him fight that Halloween Grima.
Yeah, Halloween Grima's a beast.
Yeah.
Yep, tough. She's tough. But,
yeah, and I'll be like, okay, he does like 52 damage. It's like, no, that's not enough because she can heal. Like, how? And then I'll have to like use a power up with Ike to get him to kill. I'm like, oh, that, yeah, she gets like 2 extra points, and that's what does that. And it's frustrating. And then there are other characters that I'll just see strewn through, and I know I got to get rid of them as fast as possible, like Midori, and who was the evil sword girl who has the Marita? Yeah, forms, like they're always a pain, and I have to be careful around them because, like, if I don't play it exactly right, they'll like one shot me, even though I've got level 40 plus whatever, and it's just so frustrating. And I'll get my points; it's never an issue, but it's just like, I try and do this to relax, and all of a sudden I'm on level 205, and I face one of these characters, and they take out one of my heavy hitters, and I'm like, oh, crap, now I'm going to get less points than that. I'm like, why? That doesn't make any sense. So.
Right. I follow you. Like, it's very interesting because, like, ever since the release of Faye, like, we actually gotten free heroes. Of course, everybody pretty much has Legendary Ike. Of course, everyone in their team. And personally, for me, I run with Reinhardt 40 plus 10.
40 plus 10? That's impressive.
Well, Reinhardt's very easy to summon, so you can easily
I usually get rid of him just for Vantage, so I can have everybody in my team have Vantage 3, because it's very handy in battle.
That it is. So yeah, I have like a 40 plus 10 Reinhardt, I think a plus 140 with Legendary Edelgard, and then
he's really good. She's so good.
Edelgard is very good, especially, again, that extra move, that really helps. And especially if you put Gale Force on her, she's deadly in arena battle.
Busted. She's really great.
Yeah, so, and yeah, facing off against a Halloween Grima, like, I'm surprised that my legendary, I couldn't take her out in one shot.
No,
so I
neither can mine.
I just had to put a heavy blade with the warding breath and just like have her just basically play defense against her and actually make it take her out. So I can understand why it would be so troublesome, especially when you hit that last level and you have faced these OP. Heck, I still remember to have that trouble when I was facing off against Summer Banner, Byleth, and Rhea.
That
one was tough. That
they
one
were
tough.
So annoying.
So
the power creep has been real. If you're still using like the day one units, it's gonna be trouble. I use Tiki though for this one. She can barely beat Robin. Like she
really?
Only on enemy phase, on player phase, Robin tanks her.
Well, I've had three teams set up for my Tempest Trials, and my first team with the bonus and everything. Right now, it's Ninian level 40, Alm 40 plus one or two. Legendary Ike, obviously, and then Eleonora, because her bow makes it so that you can't attack her.
Yeah.
So, like, which is totally broken in boss. And, like, I barely get through at times. And then my second team is just a hodgepodge of characters, and one of them was Deidre, who, of course, can kill dragons, except Robin. It does, like, 20 damage to her, and that's not enough. I'm like, da frick. So I remade my third team, which was originally very more balanced, and I put in the Black Knight, who can absorb damage like nobody else, and I put Marth and Crom together. So just,
yeah.
you cannot beat three Falchions. I know this.
Dragon
Slayer. You cannot beat three Falchions. So just annoying. But I'm almost at 400 orbs, which is good, because we should be getting a new banner in the next 3 days. They said the 18th. So we should be getting a new trailer for that. And it says it's a new hero banner. So looking forward to that.
Nice, nice, nice. Yeah, I'm currently sitting at like just past the 100 orb mark. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the next banner is outside the Halloween banner. So here's hoping we get something new. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tyler, what have you been playing?
So I have been playing Smash. Will and I will talk about that together, but I've also been playing a ton of Hades still. It just continues to grow on me. At this point, I'm at like 50 hours played into it, and I'm still getting, just every time I get back to the House of Hades, new story content to reveal. I just maxed out my relationship with Megara the Fury. And like it was a really cool arc that unveiled itself over like 40 hours of gameplay. You can tell that they had some history, like from the minute that you meet her as the very first boss. But the way the relationship kind of grows and the way it reveals what it was is really, really satisfying. So that was fun. And now I'm maxing out my relationship with Dusa, the snake-headed house cleaner. And she's hilarious and adorable. Mm-hmm. So I've been enjoying that. The last week I didn't really talk a ton about the gameplay, so I guess I'll do that a little bit now because it's been this in Smash Bros. One of the things that keeps you coming back to this game is that there are six weapons that you can use, and they're all really, really different. You have the standard sword, which is obviously good for close range fighting, and it has like a slam attack that sends a shockwave that covers a little bit of distance. You have a spear, which you can throw, and you can like summon it back to you, which is pretty fun. So it's kind of more of a ranged weapon, but also you can do some decent short range damage. There's a bow, obviously long ranged. There's fists, which are only good at short range. There's a shield, which lets you block stuff, but actually is like kind of really good on offense too. It's got some really cool stuff that I'll talk about. And then there's a gun that you get that I thought at first was terrible, but because each of these weapons also have different aspects, where there's four different forms for each one. So really there's like 24 different weapons that you can choose from, and each plays completely differently. So the sword, you can, its normal aspect, it will like boost your movement speed and your damage slightly. And you can like level that aspect up 5 levels. And it, once it's maxed out, you'll have a significant boost to your speed. Then its second aspect, I think it's aspect of Nemesis, that is a critical focused weapon. So it changes the way it looks to be more of like a serrating blade. And it does like critical damage. So you can, when you're escaping and you're fighting enemies, you naturally will want to max out your critical more. So it'll change the way you play the game. So you'll start trying to seek out Artemis's boons instead of Aphrodite's boons. And you can become this critical machine. The shield has one aspect that I love, that you can throw it out. It's the aspect of Zeus. You can throw it out in front of you and it will rotate and just like kind of sit like a Beyblade and just in the middle of the room or wherever you aim it, like just buzzsawing enemies while you run around and bash them with the shield. And it just lets you do this really cool crowd control thing that the normal shield doesn't do at all. The normal shield, you can like throw it and have it bounce off of people, but it plays entirely differently. It feels like an all new weapon. That's the same for the gun, which again, I thought was like the worst as its original form, but it has this aspect of Eris where you can shoot your special, which is like a bomb. You can shoot this bomb, and if you land in the explosion, you'll do bonus damage for 8 seconds. And the bonus damage is significant. So at first, you know, at a lower level, it's not that great. But once you max it out, you're just like mowing people down. And it is so satisfying to see how fast you can go through it. There are so many ways to play. You can turn on, after you beat the game, you'll get, the first time you escape, you'll get this pact of punishment that challenges you basically to beat the game with different conditions that you can choose. So you can choose to have a ton of enemies, you can choose to have a time limit, you can choose to have the boss battles enhanced, and you can stack these in any way you want to make it like the custom challenge. And to get through those, it requires you to kind of think through, okay, which weapon do I want to use, which god, what boons do I want to get from them? Because in a time trial run, especially like I'm using the bow right now, and I have this Hera aspect, which lets me like put a different weapon on top of my normal attacks, and my regular attacks are doing a ton of damage, but it's a bow that shoots one arrow dead straight. So the time trial is really, really difficult for me. So I've been trying to figure out, okay, which ways can I modify this weapon through the actual gameplay? There's different power-ups you can get in the middle of runs that'll do that. And it's so satisfying to put together these perfect combinations and just start dealing death. I like mowed through the final boss the other day with this. I had like a laser cast, is called, and I like put it down from Demeter, and she like shoots this frozen laser and it slows the bosses down. And I had it like so it would lock onto me. So I'm running behind Hades and just having these three laser beams like funnel into him, and his health just vanished. It was so much fun to put together, and just because I thought about it before I did it, how do I want to customize this? But because it's a roguelike, you can't totally pick exactly what you want. You kind of have to hope that things work out, that you'll get the gods and the boons that you want. So it makes it so, you know, you have to think on your toes. You have to say, okay, this isn't happening. Time to pivot in the middle of a run, and you can switch this to something else. It's a delightful, delightful game, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, in the course of the last week, both Honest Trailers and Yahtzee did their things on Hades, and they both like praised the game heavily. And you know, you don't get praise often from Yahtzee, but he likes Supergiant Games. He loves the story behind it. He hated the machine gun. He honestly did, but everything else he really dug. So you know, I might try out Hades myself. I'm not a big roguelike fan. I honestly am not, but
definitely
this one feels different.
It's very different. It really is. I don't like roguelikes either, but this is the exception. It doesn't feel like a roguelike.
All right, Will?
Oh, for me, as with Ty, I've also been playing a bit of Smash Bros. Again, we'll talk more Steve later on. But mostly, I have been just going back onto the recent event. Because right now, currently happening is the Overwatch event, Halloween event of the Halloween event on Overwatch. And okay, new costumes, new characters, and of course, like a new amped up mode for Juggenstein's Revenge, which vengeful ghosts and more faster zombies. Yeah, like even more things to worry about now. But yeah, so a new variation on the classic Juggenstein mode, which Horde mode, which again always nice, and of course new combos with new characters with Ash from Jennifer Hale as well as Baptiste. Always nice to hear all these different characters. Of course, like there's some rewards here and there. Some overall, I'm very like going back to the Halloween Overwatch event as they come yearly, and of course, naturally as well, I also wrote about the story of this one, and of course, been going back to season two of Fall Guys. And I'm just very surprised they actually bring in this collaboration with Sega. And they actually bring in the costume of Sonic into Fall Guys. I was like, okay, didn't see this one coming. I mean, sure, they collaborated with other indie games like Enter the Gungeon, Hotline Miami, Portal. I'm very like surprised they collaborated, but they actually actually got the license to have Sonic in Fall Guys. Oh man, I guess Dr. Robotnik got his wish and made Sonic a jumping mean bean machine in a sense. I'm sorry, Todd. I know that. But
meh.
But yeah, just like so, actually, can have so many people playing as Sonic in this game. Like, it's so meta, but okay, like Sonic in Fall Guys. Eh, why not? Why not? So I can only imagine how if they could magic actually put it like in Mario, then we have another Mario and Sonic idea game right here. So here's hoping that Nintendo gets the license for Mario if they can. And overall, it has been just been pretty quiet again. Just recently leveled up to I think level almost just past level 80 now in Ring Fit Adventure. And overall, it's just yeah. Again, don't never skip leg day. Keep on working out, and just overall, I can not emphasize enough. Ring Fit is a good time to is a good thing to have in this time. So yeah, or if you can manage to go and go out, but. Highly suggest Ring Fit. Highly suggest Ring Fit.
All right. Well, we went from thinking right before the podcast that there honestly hasn't been a lot of news to, yeah, there's actually been a lot of news. So we're going to talk about all of it. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And as teased, yes, Minecraft Steve has made it into Smash Brothers, and he's crafted a wide variety of opinions about his gameplay. Now, I won't have to tell you mine. No? Nothing? Okay, fine. Okay,
oh, mine. I totally missed that. No, I missed that. Crafted I missed that. That was good. You deserved more credit for that. That was good. Thank that you. Was good. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know what? Boo for me. Boo. I shouldn't have picked up on that.
It's okay. I don't expect much from your brain. You're basically a zombie. Hi-oh! boy. I was going to do an Enderman joke next, but let's just move on. Anyway, so Tyler, Steve, or dang it, sorry, Tyler and Will. If Steve's here, by all means, he can speak for himself, but go ahead and give us your impressions on Steve. Tyler, you first.
So I don't really like Steve. I think his gameplay is, it's very stiff. And honestly, I think this is what Todd didn't think he should be in the game, and I don't think it's because I don't agree with that, but I think the execution is lacking from Sakurai and his team here. Steve is really complex, and like that's fine. A lot of characters are complex, but his entire game is for me. There's a few things I don't like. The first thing is just his attributes. He cannot jump at all. Mm-mm. He cannot run at all, and his air speed is atrocious. Like, he has just really bad stats like that. And I like characters like Martha's my go-to. He's fast, he's got a good jump, he's got a great recovery. Like, that's just, it's just an opposite thing for me. But I also don't like Steve's resource management. It seems like it's a little too much at times. Like, the digging is actually fairly committal to actually mine the resources that you need. And you need resources for like every single move. Like, if you want to craft the iron sword, you need to have like 4 units of iron, and you'll get that pretty quickly. I think you start out with 3, but it's still just like those things break quickly, and your down air depends on having iron. If you don't have iron, you can't do the move. It won't appear. Like, there's not a weaker version of it. It just doesn't exist. The same goes for his side beam. His minecart. So you are constantly needing to mine these resources. And with a character that moves really, really slow, I find it so hard to get the space, the breathing room that you need to actually put these tools together. I thought his recovery looked like it was going to be broken because he could just put a block under himself wherever. But it's actually really tight to the stage where you could put those blocks. They show this, Sakurai showed this in the demonstration, that the further, like if you're far off the stage, you can't put a block down. But it's like way closer to the center stage than you think it is. I have a really hard time recovering with this character because his up B is atrocious. It just like he goes, he can glide with it, which is cool, but there's no hitbox on it outside of the very, very beginning. It's very easy to interrupt and intercept. So his recovery is not what I had hoped it was going to be. And just, it's just a clunkiness with the blocks as well. You can only put them in, like, there's a grid that you can put the boxes in. You can't, like, when you do a jump, for example, his normal jump does not go very high. But he can, at maximum height, he can only put a block right on the stage. Like, the box is going to sit on the ground. And it's weird because I want to try to, like, do these cool combos. He has a lot of moves that don't do a ton of knockback. He's got a ton of moves that you can just, like, click somebody with. And you feel like you should be able to click somebody with multiple times. But he's just a little too stiff to do it. So he has his up air, right? His up air, he swings his axe over his head. And he does it quickly. So it looks like I should be able to like whack, 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 whack. So my theory is like, okay, whack, whack, jump, put a box down, whack, whack. And that should be a combo. But it's not true. It doesn't work. It's too long to put the box below him. And his little overhead whack, whacks just don't do a lot of damage. So when I saw Sakurai show the character off, I had hoped he would be more fluid. He has his up smash, for example. He puts a flaming box above his head. And I thought that, like, the game was glitched because I put the box up and Steve, like, is stuck. He just sits there staring at it. And then he swings the axe and he breaks the box. And it's weird because every character has, like, you know, slow animations sometimes. And it's just like, if he misses you, you're going to be able to punish him with it. But it feels like instead of staring at the box, Steve should be able to move when you put the box out. And it just, he can't move. So he just is really gets stuck in place a lot and his movement is terrible. He's just not for me. He's not my type of character. What do you think, Will?
Yeah. As far as concerned, that's the one thing that's the major gimmick about him. Like he's mostly more of a resource management in regards to his mining material. And of course, like when you have to go to certain stages, different parts of the stage to mine certain craft, that's that whole balancing act. Like, when I'm basically, I've seen and also played against, like, one thing gotta notice is that, I don't know, it feels like there's just, like, a lot of things you have to manage with. Like, I've seen, like, some other, like, YouTube videos, and I'll call, like, Alpha Rad and everyone else, like, make some interesting combos and setups. Like, for example, if you manage to go and catch someone in a throw, like, first you place a block out right above the edge, and then you grab someone and actually can rebound that throw. Like, that thing is, like, very sick. But, like, for me, Steve is just like, okay, I gotta make sure I have everything, make sure set up everything, and then once I create, like, a diamond sword at least, or, like, a concrete silver sword, then, yeah, I can actually do some damage with it. But everything else, it just feels like, yeah, he's definitely much more of a grounded character. I mean, I guess in the same sense as, like, Little Mac in a sense, but Little Mac's more speed and power, while he's a bit more rounded in a sense, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but with Steve, it's like, again, managing resources and of course putting blocks to actually really utilize either be for defenses or create an iron out of nowhere to do spikes on people. It's definitely a whole lot to definitely balance out. I can't really say like it's like takes me out of it, but at the same time, I understand that Sakurai's trying to make it as close to the source material as well, because in the game as well, Steve can't really jump. Like, he only jumps, like, one block at a time. And, of course, like, that kind of reflects here in Smash Bros. Like, jump on one block, and, of course, Okoni pack in so much block materials, of course, making platform recoveries, as long as you have material. So there's just that thing that you have to always keep in mind, in the back of your mind of. So that's kind of the one thing that kind of, like, I get it. It's a reference to his source material, but at the same time, it's like I gotta do some resource management with my material, with my character. With Steve, is like, yeah, that's a little bit. It's gonna be on the tricky side. So there is a learning curve, and they have to do a lot of things to really set up great KOs and kills with Steve. So that's where my current state at, my mind is at.
I'm so glad you said the resource or the source material thing, because that's what Sakurai has done so well. And I think this is another case of him doing it well, but it just not really working. Like, Duck Hunt works because his moveset has nothing to do with Duck Hunt outside of, like, there's a bullet that, or, like, he shoots guns. And, like, that's, like, his moveset has nothing to do with what you find in Duck Hunt. Steve is really trying to be true to Minecraft, and that's great. But I don't think it works as a fighter in Smash the way it should have. His moveset is cool. It just doesn't feel as smooth as it should. If they took some lag off of his moves, I think he would be really, really fun, because I was like working on this combo with him where just his normal like walk forward and swing his sword. If you hit with like the base of that sword at like 70% at the edge, you get a guaranteed dunk with his forward air. And it's like really cool to like pick somebody up right when they do a standard get up and you're right there. You bash him, you slam him down. Really fun and satisfying and absolutely trolly. Like, if you love to troll your friends, this character is the troll master for sure. But outside of those like rare moments, I'm usually pretty accurate with how good characters are going to be. I could be wrong though. I'm not an expert. I think Steve is going to be one of the worst characters in the game. I don't think his moveset really works the way it could have had they just sped him up a little bit. Maybe they would have thought he would have been overpowered in that way. If they had expanded where he could place blocks, that would definitely mm-hmm. have made him a little overpowered. But as it stands, and you know, I was playing in handheld mode. I haven't played in handheld mode. I usually like to play on the GameCube controller, so it was a little foreign to me. I've seen great players like Esam do like pretty cool stuff with putting blocks to stop people from getting back to the ledge. I just find it clunky to move that way. I don't think the movement is as smooth as I would have liked it to be. So yeah, I mean, that's where I am on Steve. I'm definitely a little disappointed.
If only there was a meme that could perfectly describe my feelings after hearing you two complain about Steve. Oh wait, I know what it is. Now is the time where we throw back our heads and laugh. Ready? Ready? Because I said that Steve does not belong in Smash Brothers, and Tyler just said those words.
No, because I didn't say no. I knew you were going to do this. No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Uh-huh.
I'm saying that the execution is not there. The concept is there. The concept is great. I don't think the execution is there. I'm blaming Sakurai and his team. I think Steve is a cool. He should be a better addition than he is, in my opinion. Like, yeah, he absolutely belongs in Smash. It's just the job that they did on his moves. I don't like playing that way. It doesn't feel good to me. It does not feel good. And I have definitely seen other people saying that. But that doesn't mean he doesn't belong in Smash. He's not worthy of being in Smash. He is. I just don't like his moveset. I don't think his moveset works out.
Right. Okay, moving on. So, there was also some news about Shin Megami Tensei's remake. Will, do you have that?
Yeah. So, basically, the main producer, the director of the game, they basically discussed about its 2-year development cycle, as well as we're going to Merciful Mode. And basically, I'm trying to make I'll just quickly sum it up, is basically, why was Merciful Mode created for a game such as notoriously difficult like Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne? Well, to basically sum it up, it's more or less love how, like, there are people who just want to go and get through with the story, but at the same time, they still want to make it as true to the Shin Megami Tensei spirit as it is. Because again, everyone, ever since 3, the original games, then of course 3 notoriously, they've been difficult from its high encounter rates, and of course naturally just like the boss fights can be downright brutal, when especially with that what was that boss again, Mott was the monster, what it was called, but basically that coffin boss, which basically has that move to basically spawn turns. Yeah, I believe it was Demon's Eye, I forgot. But overall, like, they just wanted like not to compromise the spirit of Shin Megami Tensei and its notorious difficulty, but they know that people just want to, like, yeah, just give a bit of a break to not just basically beat you over the head to the bloody point that people would just not play this game anymore. I mean, sure, if you want to like power through that notorious difficulty that Shin Megami Tensei and Atlus is known for, by all means, go ahead. It is still there for you if you want to take that challenge. But for those who just want to, like, yeah, there are those casuals that want to, like, just go through the game. Sure, why not? That's the reason for Merciful Mode, but there is still a challenge in that mode. So that's basically it. And of course, naturally, with the 2-year cycle of development after, I think it was after Shin Megami Tensei 5, I don't know, like, basically once it was announced, it was like a 2-year development cycle. So it basically saying it's not really much that has been changed from the base game. Obviously, updated scale graphics, of course, the inclusion of voice acting, which that's the major thing of what as well. That's kind of the major pull of it. So there's going to be development of that. Of course, naturally, with the whole 2 different DLCs between either Raidokuzo Noha of Devil Summoner or, of course, the original content of Dante of Devil May Cry 2's version, Dante, as DLC. So there's also that little development cycle there. So that's what's been explained.
Right.
So overall, it's an interesting development cycle for Shin Megami Tensei HD. But either way, I can't wait for this thing to come out next year. And right now, the Japanese release is close approaching. I think like maybe at the end of the month, I think. I can't remember at the top of my head. But yeah, the Japanese release is close at hand. While, of course, we're just waiting here in the West side. So
yeah, all we know is 2021 for both of them, 3 and 5. So, oh, well. Okay, but we do not have to wait too long for the arrival of Mario Kart Circuit, which comes out tomorrow, or today, if you're listening to this at first post. And, of course, this is where you actually have your own Mario Kart RCs, for lack of a better term, and you get to basically create a course in your own home and make it feel like you're actually in a Mario Kart Circuit while just, you know, playing Mario Kart. So, Tyler actually had a very interesting thought about this. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, so this looks so cool to me. Like, this just looks like one of the... I want it pretty badly, honestly. But I'm concerned that it's not going to sell super well because, one, they're not really marketing it phenomenally, but two, I think that they really are making a mistake by not putting in a Princess Peach cart. Specifically Peach. I think Yoshi should be in as well. If they had 4 carts, I think suddenly now it feels like a collector's item and you want to get all 4. But with just Mario and Luigi, you're leaving out every female gamer, one, which I just think is a total blunder. And two, it feels more like a half-baked experience. I mean, it's like almost like Smash Brothers in Mario Kart. It's who did you pick? Like, who's your main? Who's your go-to Mario Kart driver? And to only have it be Mario and Luigi, I think is a big mistake that's going to limit the success of this product. It looks so cool, but if they had Peach and Yoshi in there, but mostly Peach, I think it would do a lot better than it's probably going to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, it's going to be interesting how this thing, once it goes, sells out to the market, because now with, I imagine this thing is kind of like the starter pack of if anything else, because obviously it comes with the track creation and all that, so I wonder if they're going to continue with this line, they have like the Princess Peach or different characters down the line, because I can't imagine how much those RCs are made of, plus we've included the whole AR kind of camera on those carts. So, and last I checked, I think it's like $200 or was it $99? $100, I think.
To buy it? I think it's $80.
Okay. So roughly, about that price. So, yeah, I would definitely would appreciate it if they had like more character variation, like with Peach or Yoshi. But as of right now, and of course with the current world situation, I think like this is just like their testing grounds. Obviously, like for people who want to like get both of them, if they have enough money, then sure they can have Mario and Luigi. But that's the thing, like I would like to play as like I don't know, heck, even Donkey Kong or someone else or Bowser or something else, like really expand that roster of car user. I mean, sure, this thing is definitely a collector's item, no doubt about that. I mean. But if they had like more variations, I think that would push more of it. But I guess it is something of a testing ground. It is a starter kit, so who knows how it is once it comes out.
I mean, it's one of those pure Nintendoisms, you know, kind of like Labo and some of the other things where they try to expand the love of certain franchises beyond what they are. And this I feel would be a good hit with kids, you know, especially with them like not playing a video game and yet totally playing a video game. It's complicated because yeah, it looks cool, but you know, you have to have the house for it.
Yes,
so like
yes,
for example,
yes,
I could not be able to do it in my apartment because A, I've got carpet and the only flat surface I have is my kitchen and bathroom, which I don't have a lot of room in. My parents' house could do it, but, you know, the sound of cars driving around is not exactly the thing that parents want to hear in their home when they're trying to work, which many of them are in the pandemic situation. And the other thing is you're limited in what you can do with these carts and the courses that you're doing versus if you just buy Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you have infinite amounts of well, not infinite, but like a much wider, robust tracks and characters that you can play as. So it's and that costs less than the carts.
Yeah,
right.
So
this is not a substitute for Mario Kart.
No,
like,
clearly
no, definitely
not.
It feels like that at points because it's like, no, you can have Mario Kart in your own home. Well, that's nice, but even they acknowledge like as a like it would set up the track. There's limits to what you can do. I mean, it's not like you're going to be able to create the most elaborate Mario Kart tracks. You have, like, what, 4 posts that you have to go through and everything. And, yeah, you're racing against the computer, but like you said, Tyler, there's only 2 of the carts you could play with Mario and Luigi. So, and it also means you'd have to have, like, you know, a larger family to play it with. You know, so or have friends, obviously. I mean, who has friends come over anymore? Come on.
Right.
Yeah. Right. In what world does that happen where we can actually have interpersonal relationships? But, you know, it's a complicated thing because this could work. But like Tyler said, they're not marketing it a lot. I didn't even know it was coming out until tomorrow until Tyler told me. And it's one of those things where Nintendo's offering it, but it feels very niche. And that can be a problem. Like, Labo was niche. It sold well enough, but obviously you haven't had anything since launch, which says something. Or if you remember the e-reader with Pokemon, where you could, it was for the Game Boy Advance, I believe, and you would be able to swipe cards to get Pokemon. It's just like, that does appeal to some, but not all. And obviously the e-reader failed, so it's going to be curious to see whether this Nintendoism is a success or a failure based on how people not just want to do it, but whether they'll actually buy it and then maintain it for a long period of time.
And just as well, because I've been seeing the previews, like obviously a lot, I think the general consensus is basically like for those who don't expect this thing to basically to replace Mario Kart, to be the Mario Kart 9, because this is clearly not it. Like it definitely has ideas that seems very very likable that wants to be implemented in the next official Mario Kart entry, but yeah, for those who are expecting this to be like the next Mario Kart, don't. This is clearly meant for a different market, definitely much more younger, and it's just basically something to like really keep you busy for that next entry. But as of right now, it's just don't put your expectation too much on the live RC circuit. But if you like these kind of things, then by all means, definitely you may get some enjoyment out of it. So yeah, just don't put too much faith into it.
No. All right, moving on to another live action Nintendo adventure, Super Nintendo World, where there was a new piece of art revealed for it, and it had a very interesting inclusion: Pikmin. What could Pikmin be doing in Super Nintendo World? So, yeah, we were actually debating this before the podcast started because, like, we're all wondering, like, you know, where's Zelda and Metroid and all of them in, you know, the Super Nintendo World? And I'm like, well, Pikmin's easier to do. You know, it's easier to sell Pikmin toys because you could just have an army of Pikmin plushies and kids would totally want them. And
yeah, but kids would also want Zelda plushies.
But Pikmin, I feel, has a more of a immediate appeal. It's like, oh, look,
Pikmin.
Yeah, but it's also kids, and kids have a very small attention span. And so if they see like brightly colored creatures, versus, say, a Zelda plushie, I feel they would go for the Pikmin just like they would go for a dog or cat plushie.
Plus, they got flowers.
They got flowers
and leaves. Of course, who doesn't like flowers?
They're colorful, they're flowery, and they don't talk back.
Yeah.
So...
they do make good for good plushes. I would agree
exactly.
with that. I would think Zelda would still do better, given that the brand recognition is so much stronger.
Yeah, but think about it from like our perspective. Okay, let's imagine we somehow got together, you know, in a world that actually allowed that, and we went into a store. All right, would we honestly, us three kings of Nintendo attire, buy Zelda plushies? No. We would want to buy more advanced things, like, you know, Zelda gear, like Zelda clothes, or like a really cool poster to hang on our walls, or a replica of the Master Sword and Shield. Not that I don't totally already have that on my wall.
And also, just a reminder, I do live in New York, so I do go to Nintendo NY.
There you go. Yes. So, but like for us, we would want some like really cool gear and swag versus kids where they're like, oh, I want the cutest thing around. Boom, there's Pikmin. So it's also about the age gap, where Pikmin is very much for all ages, where Zelda honestly does require at least a little more thought and emotional depth, especially after Breath of the Wild. So like that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, there will be people who won't want, like, you know, a Zelda plushie or a Link plushie or a Wolf Link plushie. There's your best seller right there. You make a Wolf Link plushie, that'll sell. But for like the characters, the pure characters like that, they'll want more like figurines, you know, they'll want like stuff like amiibo, you know, that's what we would get. So, but we don't know what this exactly means, but more than likely there will be a Pikmin something at Super Nintendo World, which we already knew, really, because it's going to be, you know, all encompassing after a while. And they announced a few weeks back that they are going to try for a spring 2021 release in Japan, so that's good. So, but it shows that they're building. They're already starting to build beyond Mario, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely is, because it seemed, you know, initial reports were that it was just going to be Mario attractions for a while. And it just, you know, why not just call it Super Mario World at that point? I do think that the Pikmin might indicate that there's going to be more than just, like, you know, Pikmin attire at gift shops. Like, I think that at a gift shop, even right away, they're going to have stuff from every Nintendo brand. It's not going to be just Pikmin. I wonder if this means that could be the second thing that gets represented there. I think it'd be odd for sure, but it definitely could work. It also made me think about cool attractions that I would want, and because it's plant life and we're thinking about Zelda as well, I don't know. I think a Lost Woods thing would be like so. That would be pretty cool. I was trying to think of a good Pikmin one, but I couldn't right off the top of my head. What Pikmin attraction would you guys like to see?
Oh man, like I'm going through the ideas ever since the three major games, and the only thing that pretty much I can only imagine is like there is that. I know there's like a Japanese sports festival, but basically you throw balls. But instead, I can only imagine here you can actually throw Pikmin at like certain bow boards to actually hit them, like something similar to like that throwing a baseball at a stand of jars, like in those carnival games.
Yeah.
So like throwing Pikmin at bow boards or throwing at certain enemies from the series of the game, like and going just like, you know, like all that Pikmin effects, like that. I can imagine that.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
Well, what we talked about before the podcast, the Find the Pikmin game, you know, like where you find Pikmin all over the park and you scan them to get points. Because if you recall, ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be like a scanner on your arm where you can
augmented
get like a
reality,
high
like an AR thing.
Yeah. But like you're going to be able to scan things to get a high score or whatever. Like that would be something to get the kids engaged. It's like, oh, look around, see if you can find a Pikmin. And that would be interesting. Now, if you want to get more physical, I like the idea of the throwing thing because that does sound like Pikmin. But what if you could do, and this is going to be kind of hard to make depending on the amount of space, but what if you actually had like a Pikmin like grabbing game, like pulling them out of the ground like Olimar, and you'll have, and it'll be kind of like Whack-A-Mole, but instead of knocking them down, you're like trying to rip them out of the ground. and it's just like, you know, you're pulling them out and you either like throw them into a bin and it's like, you know, how many Pikmin can you collect in a certain amount of time? And you're like, you're running around all over the board as the Pikmin like pop up or, you know, sprout out of the ground. It would be hard to do defending because obviously you don't want to have the holes too big to where the kids or, you know, whatever, trip into the holes. But if you do it just right, it could be like a very fun experience. And bonus for the parents, your kids are going to be tired.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So that's a win-win.
I could imagine, like, yeah, something similar to like a test your might kind of deal, and like just try to pull up Pikmin, like just try to pull up like a purple Pikmin that's just so heavy, and yeah.
And obviously they would have to be different weights because of the different Pikmin sizes. Like the rock Pikmin would be the heaviest, obviously, but that also be worth more points. So do you go for the lighter ones that you'll get fewer points, or do you go for the heavier one and try and get the most? So there's ways that they can do this.
I my mind goes to actually the spaceship. Like you make your own Hawktate, which I think is the name of Olimar's ship, right? I think
that's
would
a
be...
planet. I believe that's a planet. I think the ship was called the SS.
Oh, you're right. It was the SS something.
I'll look it up. Go
regardless,
ahead.
You could build your own like spacecraft. I think that would be pretty cool.
That could be another way to do it, and
the SS Dolphin. The SS Dolphin.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, duh, I should have known that, because like, the GameCube's code name was the Dolphin.
It's okay. So, but like, there's a lot of ways to do it. And Pikmin, again, is something that we were talking about earlier. Like, that could be something that's very easy to incorporate, whereas something like, you know, Zelda or Metroid or even Pokemon, to a certain extent, would be harder to incorporate quickly. Because like we said, like you said, Tyler... you know, they were only going to do Mario first because that's the brand. Like, that's the trademark is Mario. You start with Mario because you know that that'll draw people in, and then you expand over time, not unlike what Disney did once upon a time. So, but now that they have more time, you know, add Pikmin. Let's get a second park going, and who knows, maybe in a few months we'll see something with Zelda. We don't know, because they were supposed to be open by now. And so this extra time might give them the point of saying, you know what, we got the time. Let's just keep expanding and see what we got by spring. So, you never know. Never know. Speaking of Test Your Might, that Will said a little bit ago, Mortal Kombat 11. As we noted last week, we are getting some brand new DLC characters via Rain, Melina, and Rambo. Why? Moving on. So, today we had the gameplay trailer for the Mortal Kombat 11 version of Rain, and yeah, he looks like a boss. Watch this trailer. He is teleporting around. He is sending you. He's teleporting you through water. I don't know how that's possible. Okay.
Well, again, this is the NetherRealm.
I know, but still, I mean, Scorpion's not just teleporting. He's teleporting through the underworld. Like that's part of his character. Sub-Zero teleports through ice. No one really knows how he does that, but okay. But like, Rain's teleporting you through water. How?
Everything is made of water, of course. Possibly, I don't know, portable dimensions, pocket dimensions, all that. There's always that little magic element in.
It just feels like an Archie Sonic kind of thing. Like, let's just do this. Like, why not? Who cares about the logic? You know. well, let's just say that Sonic's speed is incalculable. Are you hearing me, Tyler? I am blessing your icon.
I am hearing you, but yeah, I'm not familiar with Archie Sonic. So.
I find that so interesting, but again, it's all about exposure, I suppose, and having access to the comics. So I didn't start reading DC and Marvel until I was 18, so I guess I can't blame you too much for that. But
we're going to this gameplay of Rain. Like, there's always something very special about Mortal Kombat ninjas, because again, we all love Scorpion, we love Sub-Zero, and just like, yeah, seeing all these different variants from Ermac and like the original Mortal Kombat ninjas, and now we see Rain here, just like, just how much using the water to his advantage, and of course, like the whole with his the storyline, of course, like he is a demigod, even though he likes to proclaim himself as a god in the realm, in the story.
Yeah,
but yeah, just like seeing him, just how he utilizes against Kotal Kahn, and just his fatality, his showing off his first fatality. Is like, geez Louise, how brutal can you be? Basically, you turn a water blade and just skin him alive like that, and just and actually harvest his eyeballs. They catch his eyeballs in a water ball. It's like, geez Louise, how creative! NetherRealm, you are very creative for your devs.
I loved his victory screen where he's got like the storm around him. Like that was beautiful. Like even Ed Boon was like, this is one of my favorites. So, yeah, it's cool, and we should be, of course, getting trailers for Rambo and Melina suit. Also, this was actually kind of interesting. Ed Boon talked about why Melina took so long to get in the game. And Ed Boon admitted that he did it this way because he wanted to build up anticipation for Melina. Because he knew that there were some fans out there that liked Melina, but he honestly didn't feel like they were as massive as we would find out they are. And so what he did was he made sure that she wasn't in the real in the original game or in like the first DLC pack because he wanted to build up suspense for her. And then all of a sudden when, you know, the first reveals come around, everyone's like, well, where the heck is Melina? And he was honestly taken aback by that. He was like, wait a minute, she really had all this support? And so he continued to like stoke the flames by doing tweets like, hey, the girl needs a break, okay? Just calm down and everything. And he fully intended to bring Melina, but he also said, I will never make a post about a character intentionally without knowing that they'll either be in the game or not. So he knew, like, so now you have, like, your access. If he talks about a character in kind of like a joking way, they might be coming. So, which is why you haven't seen anything of Cyrax. You know, because he has not talked about them. So, yeah.
I'm surprised that he didn't know Melina was popular. I mean, I feel like she's one of the most popular in the game.
Well, but like, I feel like it's all context because when you're the developer and you see, because like, who's the most popular? Scorpion. All right, and then you go Sub-Zero after that, and then you know Johnny Cage and Liu Kang and Raiden. Obviously, Goro's got a
the big original fan. The original cast.
Yeah, the original cast got like and a Shang Tsung, obviously, especially after the movie. And but like you know when you get to like the second tier characters, which I would honestly put Melina in more or less.
Right.
You know, it.
Yeah.
How do you gauge the fan base? And because she's been in there like a lot, and so it's like you know, it's almost like they're expected. It's kind of like Captain Falcon. All right. Think about it. Because like when Captain Falcon got into Smash Bros., everyone's like, oh, that's cool. We got Captain Falcon. And then all of a sudden he was in the, you know, Melee again. It was like, oh, this is great. And then what happened when Brawl and 4 happened? Everyone, they didn't announce Captain Falcon originally. And everybody was like, where the heck is my Captain Falcon?
Right. Until the Lucina trailer came out.
Yeah. And like, and everyone was like, there's your Falcon. Calm down. But it's like, did we expect that? Like, where was our Captain Falcon movement? No. So, and I mean, I don't know what the gauge is. I mean, it's not like he can pull everyone and say, like, who's your favorite Mortal Kombat character? Melina's, like, number one. You know, I doubt it's that easy. So
Right.
Now, I'm sure they have data on like, play usage, though. I don't know if
maybe.
She was good
that,
in the last
that's a good
game.
Point.
But
that's a good 10. Point, play usage. Well, but, hey, now he knows. And so, more than likely, when Mortal Kombat, what are we at, 12? Yeah, so Mortal Kombat 12 comes out. Melina is probably going to be in the main game or first DLC character, just so we can avoid this a second time.
I mean, again, like from the original games as well. I mean, again, the top femme fatales of the game, aside from Sonya, was indeed Katana, Jade, and Melina.
Yeah.
Since they represent Outworld, so they're pretty much one of the more popular ones. I mean, as well outside Sindel as well.
Yeah, I want to take a small break because I want to vent on something, and this is going to sound really weird, but just roll with me on this. All right, on YouTube there is a channel called Video Game Rap Battles. All right, and it's really good. Like I got it. They did an awesome Among Us one that is like totally boss. Like if you're a fan of the game, go play that. But they did one where they kind of like broke the fourth wall, if you will, and did anime versus video games in terms of who is you know the best entertainment, and the anime guy was praising, you know, all the amazing women and lady characters that they have. And he made a joke saying that video games try and cover up the women. And he used Tracer as an example. And I'm like, have you ever played a fighting game, bro? Like, Melina, Katana, Ivy, Orchid. Like,
yeah, the 90s were
really?
Quite a time. 90s were quite a time.
He literally called the women in video gaming's modest horses. I'm
what?
Like, I swear to God. He said he's like looking like a modest horse, and it's like,
what?
Excuse me? Yeah, exactly. And I've been thinking about it for so long, and that's kind of the point of video games is that they've kind of shied away from like the very much of exposing of women, but that doesn't mean we haven't had them. Again, Ivy and Soul Calibur is the great example, or the original Katana Melina models, the original Shiva model from Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
So it's just like, yeah, video games don't do modest.
No.
Yeah, like obviously this guy has not done his research because again, ever since from the 90s, like yeah, it was quite out there. Even with the games of like Tony Hawk and as well other games, like they were really out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure today.
Tifa.
Oh my gosh, the Tifa animation is hysterical.
Yeah.
And again, with today's games, I mean, sure, they have toned down, while others have not. They have not changed a bit, like Soul Calibur's IV, sure, no doubt.
No.
But yeah, like, it's just, again, with the changing of the ages and, of course, the climate, yada, yada, yada. Like, yeah. Just the females in gaming is just, like, there is it's from all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. I got four words for that guy, all right? My Sheer Nui jiggle physics.
And Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive. Don't forget about Dead or Alive.
Or Dead or Alive. Oh, yeah, Dead or Alive. Or not just Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive Extreme.
Oh, yeah, that was commercial, so yeah.
No, not commercials. It was a volleyball game, remember?
Yep, and as well, it made its own spin-off game as well. Yes.
Yeah, so it's like, yo, gaming, don't do modest. All right? Trust us on that, all right?
Right.
Okay, I remembered that, and I had to talk about it, because it's like, I don't like that line. And, like, this guy did some great raps about video games. Like, you don't live up to the hype, call it Rap Battlefront. I'm like, oh, that's totally a great line. But, like, that one was like, no, trust
you
me,
had
developers.
No idea.
Developers really don't do modest when it comes to female gaming models. No, they really don't. Moving on. So, Hyrule Warriors is, we are, let's see, is it the 22nd or the 23rd of November?
November 20th.
Yeah, the 20th.
So I always get the date mixed up for some reason. Anyway, the 20th. So we are almost just about a month away from the release of Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, and a brand new trailer has come out confirming that the Yiga clan, and it's their leader, Shao Kahn. what was it, Kafka?
Koga.
Koga!
Yeah.
Right, like the first gym leader from... for the seventh gym leader from Fuchsia City. Right. But I don't know why I just blanked. But anyway, yeah, Koga and the Yiga clan are coming back, and there's a couple interesting things from this trailer. The first one is obviously the now iconic line, "I'm going to kill you to death." Seriously, YouTube blew up with that line.
And to be fair, like, as well, like, I don't blame you for not remembering Koga too much, because, like, how much screen time he had in the original game of Breath of the Wild, like, it's barely nothing. So I don't blame you if you can't even remember the guy.
Now, the Yiga clan, I remember, because they would appear in random spots, and that was actually a very fun part of gameplay.
They were fun.
They were fun.
They loved bananas. That was pretty silly.
Bananas! Bananas! So, like, that was the thing. But we apparently are going to have a brand new character, like a really new, brand new character coming to the game. There is someone who I guess is either controlling or helping lead the Yiga clan. And they have the mark of the Gerudo on them. And they have a staff on them that makes them apparently a magic user. So a lot of people are wondering, who is it going to be? Then the two biggest notions are Vati or Yuga. And Vati was, of course, from Four Swords Adventure and something else.
Yeah, he was in...
Because I remember him in Four Swords, but...
He's in a bunch. Was he in Minish Cap, too?
Yeah, Minish Cap feels right. But and then, of course, Yuga was from Link Between Worlds. He was the Ganon of Lohrule. So, if that's true, how did he get to this version of Hyrule? If it even is the same form of Yuga, we don't know. So, but the fact that they're doing this kind of a storyline in the midst of everything going on with Calamity Ganon is interesting, because it means that this could be a tease of sorts of what we're going to get with Breath of the Wild 2. Maybe. We don't know. But it's curious to be sure.
Yeah, this looked like Yuga to me, too. I'm pretty firmly in the Yuga camp. If it's Yuga or Vati, because it could be a new character. It could just be somebody we've never seen before.
True.
It just feels like, yeah, like the design and just the hairstyle, of course, with the staff, it just feels really much I'm leaning towards Yuga myself. Like, and it's just how, if it's confirmed Yuga, like how the games will connect. I mean, that's going to mess up the timeline even more, which, like, yeah, Zelda timeline is just absolutely crazy. But yeah, but Yuga and of course Koga, of course the Yiga clan, just everybody else showing up in this trailer. Even though it's like it's a very short trailer, but actually just showing off how much personality and, of course, like naturally, like the expanded voice acting of this cast is like, okay, this is getting interesting. Like, okay, so can we actually play as Koga? Because again, in the original Hyrule Warrior games, we actually can play as the villain. So I wonder if we can actually play as Koga. So that brings up the possibility.
Well, if you recall, in the original, we got to play as Ganon and some of his cronies, so it's not impossible. It could be a DLC character, maybe. We don't know. I don't know. I like this for the reason that one of the biggest detractions in some people's mind about Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity is that we already know the ending. Ganon wins. Like, that is literally written in the storyline, so everything has to fall apart. But if they give us, you know, these side mysteries that could potentially tie into Breath of the Wild 2, maybe, or help expand on something in Breath of the Wild that we didn't know about before, that's worth diving into. And a lot of people... okay, I'm not going to lie. Actually, more people were interested in the I'm going to kill you to death line than the mystery. Seriously, go and look at the official YouTube video for that trailer, and like every other comment is going to be I'm going to kill you to death. So, like, I had to scroll down really far before someone even mentioned the hooded character, and they were like, there's this mysterious character that could be in Breath of the Wild 2, and everyone's talking about a kill you to death line. Okay. So, yeah, I totally get that, my friend. I totally get that. If you have a theory on who you think that mystery character is, Vati, Yuga, or a brand new character, let us know in the comments below, okay? Moving on to slightly more depressing news. Level 5, who are, of course, the team behind, Yokai Watch
and Professor Layton.
Again, I was pausing, Will. I was pausing. I wanted to make sure I said the name right, because I wasn't going to have another Koga situation. So, Yokai Watch, Professor Layton, what was it, Izuna 11?
Right. Yeah.
Zuna 11 and certain other Ni No Kuni.
Ni No Kuni, yes.
But they have apparently shut down all of their North American companies or their outlets. What do I want to call it? Studios. There we go. Mm-hmm. Studios. It's really weird because this was documented about, I think it said like early 2019, because they had let go of certain people, but they said that they weren't doing like a large scale restructuring. And yet now a new report is saying that no, they're just straight up shuttering all of their North American studios. And that in the future, at present, as best we know, all of their games are only going to release in Japan. Which is sad for various reasons, not the least of which is that we know Yo-Kai Watch 4 is coming out, and it has been announced for America and the Switch. So, is that now only Japan? What does that mean for Professor Layton? Does that mean that we're never going to get Professor Layton again? So, I don't know. It's really sad, though.
It seems that way.
It's kind of sad to see like the studio of these great series that level 5 is just seems to be having such rough time right now. I mean, of course, world events aside. And I can only imagine, like, if this is true that level 5 is shuttering its all its studios, like, I can only imagine, like, what next, like, we're going to its IP. Perhaps some other studio will pick it up, like, with, I don't know, Atlas or someone
else.
Well,
it's not going away. It's just going to become a Japanese-only company.
Perhaps. But
That's what the report is.
As you said, like, does it lead to the future of, like, will it ever be released outside the States? So, I mean, here's hoping that it does still has a chance to make its way of being picked up by somebody else, like, I don't know, Sega, Atlas, or, like, any other different companies that does.
That's not going to happen because they're still in business. They're just not in business here.
Okay, yeah, it's okay, one of those really right. curious things.
Okay, I stand corrected. Okay.
Like, I feel bad, because I grant you, I have not played a vast majority of their games, but I do like Professor Layton, the few that I have played, which I believe was the Miracle Mask, and obviously Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton, which is a very awesome game. And I did play Gadtriel. Didn't like the ending, but still. So it's sad, because I know there's a lot of Level 5 fans out there for very good reasons. They honestly do really good games, but for them to shutter everything in North America, that's very curious move. So
Yo-Kai Watch just didn't take on here, you know. Yeah. Like I don't, you know, that's just I could be wrong. I don't think those games did well on the 3DS as well as people had hoped, at least, because it was
not
billed as another Pokemon, and it just certainly did not
come close. I think here I'll look it up, but like The franchise itself is big enough. I mean, it even has its own anime, which was on Disney. So
I think it was big in Japan. Like, it was very successful in Japan.
Here we go. Ooh, that's not good. So it says that when Yo-Kai Watch had its initial release, and it was the worst of the series to date.
Ooh.
Oh, that's not good. So yeah, it said it sold only 150,000 units, and it was quickly displaced the next year, and it sold only 291,000 copies in 2019. So, yeah, maybe that's why.
I think that's a big part of it, because it felt like they were putting a lot into a Yo-Kai Watch.
Right.
And Layton, as great as it was, it was never a great best-selling series. Like, that was never the point. It was meant to be a niche thing, kind of like Phoenix Wright, which is why, you know, and they even said they made Professor Layton off of Phoenix Wright, just amplifying his character and not having any flaws. So, which is another video game rap battle that they did, Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton. It was awesome. So, I don't know, I was like, that's the problem. And Ni No Kuni, as good as it was, you know, I don't think that sold as infinitely well as people suspect. So it's possible that they're just trying to, you know, cut losses and only go in the region that they know they can do some success in, and I guess that's Japan.
it's just really kind of sad. Like, these series, they would show great promises. But as I said, like, Yo-Kai Watch tried to compete with Pokemon, which... yeah, you don't fight against a monster like Pokemon. And I guess, like, the whole pop, the theme of yokais and Japanese monster folklores, I guess it just didn't really catch too much attention. I mean, sure, there are Japanese folklore games in the game industry that does very well in the West, like with like Shin Megami Tensei and everything else, like Nioh. But yeah, I guess with everything else that just happened, I guess they just couldn't really find their footing. I mean, I really do appreciate Ni No Kuni. Again, that was made also in hands with Studio Ghibli, but just to see it, like, couldn't really stand foot to the current gaming industry, it just feels... It is a sad thing to see.
Yeah. All right, but now on to slightly better news. I don't know what you want to call it. The revenue report for the Pokemon Company came out the other day, and... for the whole company, of all of their materials and brands and games and titles and such, they made $4.2 billion.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, here's the kicker, though. You'd think, like, oh, that has to be all Pokemon Go sales. Well, it's not. Because the previous year, which was definitely a more Go-heavy year, they only made $2.8 billion. So they increased their sales profit by $1.4 billion. And there's no doubt that part of that was because of Sword and Shield.
Which absolutely.
Yeah, which has sold over 17 million copies plus so far. So, yeah, go Pokemon. Like, they ain't suffering, okay?
No. Yeah, and it is crazy, like, the disconnect, I think. It really puts it on display of the hardcore Pokemon fan versus... the average Pokemon fan, because I'm sure that there are people who are upset with the direction Pokemon Company has gone, who are seeing this and are just like, no, like, this is going to make them double down on this new direction. But people are generally pretty pleased, I think, overall with what Gen 8 was.
And then, and not even just that, but like Pokemon Go, they've just continued to refine and enhance, and it's still, you know, coming up with new features. Niantic is just doing a fantastic job, even though we don't play it anymore. You know, I still see all the updates. Like, they added, like, Team Rocket, and now Team Rocket's getting, like, new Pokemon, and there's new eggs and legendary battles and all that. They don't have to do that much. They just have to keep, you know, fine tuning it. And then they had, like, the Cafe Mix game. I'm sure they probably made some money off of that. So even though this year will no doubt have that dip, because obviously there's not a Sword and Shield release outside of the bundle pack, which obviously won't sell as much. But they're just doing so well that they don't have to do much. They just have to keep refining, keep fine-tuning, keep adding little things. Now, 2021 might see another jump because of Pokemon Snap, whatever the sequel is. But which we need something new on that. Can we just say that? We need, like, a new trailer. We need something. I mean, you gave us the teaser, and we're grateful. But we need more, and we need a release date. Because I was really hoping it would come out this year, but it was all a lie. So, just like everything in this year. I mean, tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not. You're not.
Oh, that's why I'm the host. So... but congrats to you, Pokemon Company. I'm glad you had a wonderful 2019, and I'm sure I'm honestly wouldn't be too surprised if Pokemon Go sales and purchases and all that went up, because what else have you been doing during the quarantine? You know, oh, I can't go and talk with my friends, but I can go and catch Pokemon outside. So why not? Eh. And finally, yes, we had a very long news day. Finally, we have Moon Studios has been talking about Ori and the franchise, Blind Forest and Will of the Wisps. And they mentioned a few things. First of all, at present, there is no plan for a third game. They are taking a step back, but they have left the world open. They are more than happy to come back to it. And they're also looking at maybe an animated show or a comic series that could continue the story. They're totally open to that. But the real kicker is that someone asked them if they would be open to Ori being in Smash Brothers, which is like obviously a very obvious question nowadays, especially since both games are now on Switch. And they were totally open for it. They even said it would be a dream come true if Ori got to be in Smash Brothers. So there you go. Ori confirmed for... I'm just kidding. So...
Right. It probably means he's not in, because no. You would think they would be on a non-disclosure at this point.
Well, not just that, but remember what Sakurai said. Nintendo picked all the characters. And more than likely, they picked, if I recall correctly, they would have probably had it picked before they even started working on Joker. All right, because remember, Sakurai said that they were already talking about Min Min before ARMS was even done. So that was, 2017 or whatever. So that was well before Ori had reached its popularity or even had both games on Switch. So even though Ori has done well on Switch, to my knowledge, it's very unlikely that it would be in this DLC pack.
Yeah.
Maybe the next one, but then the next one's like, what, 5 years away at best? Because Sakurai needs a break.
Right. He needs a vacation. The next one is Smash 6. I would be very surprised if they...
Yeah. Smash Brothers Super Ultimate plus Knuckles.
Yeah, but Knuckles should be in it, though. So maybe,
he should be in it.
Maybe we take that little...
Knuckles will shadow
totally,
you.
I would be totally fine with Knuckles as one of the remaining DLC characters, because he's totally different from Sonic.
Me too.
He'd have a totally different moveset. It would be fine. Tails? Yeah, sure. But Knuckles. Always Knuckles. So, all right, and actually, our main event is about Smash Brothers, because I saw an article stating that Impa from Zelda, especially the later versions of Impa, should be in Smash Bros. Because she's an important part of the Zelda history. She's got her own moveset. She's actually going to be in a Hyrule Warriors. So, should she be in Smash Bros.? We all said yes. Impa's pretty cool. But then we really got thinking about it. There's not really a lot of Zelda characters in there. They got three Links. Three. And then you have the two Zeldas, Zelda and Sheik. And then Ganon. And that's it. So, next version of Smash Bros., they should totally just take out Toon Link and Young Link, because they just basically play the same.
Oh, I disagree. Young Link should stay. Regular Link should go.
You
should
shut
just
your
be
mouth.
Young Link. Young
shut
Link is
your
the best.
Mouth. How dare you? At least they did something different with regular Link by giving him, like, the time bombs and everything.
Yeah, that was sweet, but Breath of the Wild is going to be done by the time the next Smash Bros. Is out. Young Link has got the... First of all, they should revisit everybody's moveset next time around. But that aside, carry on.
Yeah. Well, in a perfect world, Lucina and Crom should play like at least somewhat different, but they don't.
Well, they Lucina and Crom do. Lucina and Marth.
Sorry, I mean,
do
Crom,
also.
Yeah. Crom, Marth, Alm. They all. Crom, Marth, Alm. Whatever. They all play the same except for Ike. Ike forever. He's the best. So, but if they were to take out even just one of the Links, okay? One of the Links. Who should be the one to replace them? What Zelda character from its history, not named Impa, should replace them? We're going to debate this as we settle it in Smash. I'm going to go first because my pick is obvious. I have said it multiple times. I'm going to keep saying it until they bring him in. Wolf, Link, and Midna. All right? The classic pairing from my favorite Zelda game, Twilight Princess. And this one I pick because it's very obvious. It's an atypical pairing, and it's something that honestly hasn't been done before in Smash Bros. Actually, I take that back. It has been done via Duck Hunt Dog. Yeah, because, you know, you got the main and the writer. So, but
and Banjo-Kazooie, sort of.
Oh, that good point. Good point. I would include that because that's the main and the writer. So, but yeah. But Wolf Link and Midna would obviously play different from both of them. You would have the darkness powers of Midna plus the natural animalistic abilities of Wolf Link. And you could have them a nice couple of tag team moves. Of course, Midna with her hair hand and using the darkness ability to do like the widespread ring area of effect attack. And then the final smash is Forbidden Shadow. She just goes crazy, summons up a whole bunch of darkness arms, and just wipes everyone off the map that's in her range. That would be so simple. It would play obviously very differently because it's an animalistic character plus magic with Midna, which obviously makes it different from Banjo-Kazooie and Duck Hunt Dog. So that right there. And Midna is beloved. I hate that she's just an assist trophy. She deserves better. We deserve better. Curse you, Minecraft Steve. Okay, I'm done. Breathing. Let it go, the fury, for now. So, yeah, my pick now forever, if they were to take out one or two of the Links, it would have to be Wolf Link in a minute. It just makes perfect sense.
Like,
so how
yeah.
does the recovery work? Sorry, Will.
Go ahead. What was your question, Tyler?
How does the recovery work?
Like the recovery off the side? That's easy. They go off the side, and Midna's hair arm hand thing. Like it would be kind of funny because
like
then you would have Midna holding on to Wolf Link, which would be hilarious in its own right. But it's that simple. Or if anything,
it would work.
Like they got away with doing various things for Steve. I'm pretty sure they can make it to where like Midna's holding on to Link via magic as she's also doing her arm hands or her hair arm, whatever. So
yeah,
that would be my idea of the recovery. How does Duck Hunt Dog do it? Does it have like, the dog?
Duck Hunt Dog, the dog flies, or the duck flies the dog up. He like carries the dog.
Yeah, so there you go. But yeah, there's ways to do it, and obviously with Midna's magic, you have a wide variety of ways to do it. And I mean, Sakurai can get creative. He's made up moves before, like Ike with Eruption or Crack Shoot with Terry Bogard. So, he can make it work. He can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Will, go ahead.
Yeah, like, mine's kind of a bit of an unusual take, I feel like. But I can only imagine, how about bringing Daruk into Smash Brothers? I know this is, like, a very oddball choice, considering you, like, want to bring a
mainstay.
Yeah.
Like, Daruk's only in Breath of the Wild.
Right. Or one of the Gorons into Smash as a hero.
Darunia from Ocarina.
Darunia or Daruk. Like basically one of the main Gorons. Because the reason I suggest it, because one, as you know, the Gorons has always been about like again they're based on sumo wrestlers in real life. And I can't imagine like of course we have like other characters like with Incineroar as a wrestler type, grappler types, all that. But I guess the kind of would go further more because again, Gorons are like they're bulky, but at the same time they do rollouts like Sonic in a sense. So like and of course there's always the DD hammer that can be combined with because again with Darunia using his hammer and of course with like the lava features of like Death Mountain. I could think they could probably put in something of a Goron character like Darunia or Daruk into Smash Bros. And it feels like he would work so well in that environment. Like sure have like go against like Ganondorf or like with, of course the mainstays of Zelda. But I feel like since if we're talking about someone who's like very like birthed in fighting, like basically just raised up into fighting with sumo, and of course just in the harsh environment of Death Mountain, I feel like he would probably be a perfect fit in the world of Smash Brothers, I feel like. Because I don't think you would expect, like, I don't know, like Princess Rudo in Smash Brothers,
yeah.
or like Or probably one of the Gerudos. Gerudos maybe, perhaps, but I kind of prefer more that one of the Gorons is actually much more suited in the realm of Smash Brothers. So yeah, I don't like Daruk or Darunia. I feel like it would be perfect for the game.
I think that would be cool because of their A, not just their size in the hammer, but the rolling ability. Like that could be a key attack move, and you could even do like what they do with Majora's Mask, where if you build up enough speed and momentum, you do the fire spin, like we like you could do in your Goron mask form. So there's a lot of ways to do that. The only thing would be Gorons don't really jump.
Right, they lack jumping. So similar in the case of like Little Mac, they're all about power and speed, but at the same time they cannot jump for that. They skip leg day.
they skip leg day.
Have you not seen their legs? Seriously.
It's true. No, it's true. I just didn't think about it. But yeah, they totally skip leg day. So, but yeah, I think that's a good pick. I think they can make that work.
Yeah, that's a good one, and I like it because they're heavies, and we don't have a lot of heavies in Smash Bros. Like as
Well,
DLC, and really
oh,
in the
as
game
DLC,
overall. Yeah,
okay.
as DLC, that's that. Yeah, the more specifically, but even I think just as their base roster, there's definitely more super light characters than there are super heavies. I mean, you got Bowser, Ganondorf, and King Dedede, but I
King
mean
K. Rool.
King K. Rool. But like those are your super heavy. Then Donkey Kong's pretty heavy too. But there's so many like Jigglypuff and Pichus out there. So it'd be fun to get a big heavy hitter in there. I like that one. And they've done enough things that you could create a move set for them. I could see the up smash, how you have to stand on them in Ocarina and they'll launch you upwards. You could it be similar to Bowser's up smash, but you could have that work as well. So yeah, I like that a lot. There's some cool stuff you could do with them. You'd
Yeah.
have to get the dancing involved in some way.
Well, that would be the taunts,
Tauntauns, the
easily.
taunts, yeah. Or the
Yeah.
victory animation,
A victory animation, 100%.
Oh, yeah. So. All right, Tyler, what have you got?
So, I like sword fighters. There's a lot of sword fighters in the game. And I don't want to do a variation of Zelda, but at the same time, like Tetra, it's incredible that we have Toon Link, but we don't have Tetra, who is. My favorite incarnation of Zelda, 100%. She has the pirate theme is really fun. I don't think that that's something that we have in Smash Bros. Outside of King K. Rool putting on his pirate hat, which is delightful, of course. But I think it would be really fun to get a Tetra in there. You could use you could steal moves from Wind Waker that aren't necessarily even hers as well. If they wanted to bring back her transformation into Toon Zelda, they could certainly do that with the down B. But I'd be totally fine with them just keeping Tetra as is, as a sword fighter with a cutlass. You could have her you could have her use I'm trying to think of what the magic abilities are in Wind Waker. But she could use the Dooku Leaf to recover, like that would be really sweet. You get the updraft, like swoosh that, have her fly in like that. She could use cannonballs. And fire those at folks. I think Tetra would be awesome. And I'm surprised that we haven't gotten her in yet, just because we have Toon Link. We've had Toon Link for so long. So I would like to see maybe they go back to having her down be transform into Zelda, because that's such a key part of Tetra's arc. While also giving her a sword move with some Wind Waker abilities, like the she could break out the Dooku Leaf. The grappling hook would be really fun as well. She'd use that to recover, like the because it's a little more lasso-y, than your normal your typical hook shot. So yeah, Tetra would be my pick.
Yeah, and then her final smash can be she can summon her crew to fire a broadside at the stage.
Yeah, no, she the final smash she drops a barrel on you, 100%. Like she drops the barrel on you, and then she launches you off the stage. Like inch like remember when they put Toon Link and they shoot him into the fortress? That'd be sick.
But yeah, that's some good picks. Now, let's quickly talk about villains. The two obvious ones are Zant and Ghirahim. Which ones do you think would be the best?
So Ghirahim would be really cool, but I think his time has sort of passed. And I, honestly, has Zant's time passed? Like, I think Zant's time may have passed as well.
Well, I mean, it's all about like how you define past. I mean, Duck Hunt Dog hasn't been alive for 30 some odd years, and yet he's still mocking us. So
yeah, has, true. But yeah. He hasn't had a game since Duck Hunt, you know, like Zelda world. Yeah, yeah, but I would think we would want like a more relevant Zelda villain.
Yeah, but we obviously can't do Calamity Ganon because
I think
that's not a thing.
That's true. That's true. I think Vati is probably the second most iconic Zelda villain. So I would lean Vati.
No, I mean if we're really gonna go second greatest, I think it'd be Majora.
That'd be interesting.
And yes, I know Majora's an assist trophy, but like in the next one, he might not be.
Like, people like, really want Skull Kid too.
I mean, Majora Skull Kid, it's kind of the same thing.
It'd
be Skull Kid.
You would picture him fighting as Skull Kid.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would call it Skull Kid.
Final smash is he can go full Majora.
Yeah.
Right.
So, because remember, Majora that we fought, who technically wasn't even his final form, as according to the lore, was just a different kind of machinations of, you know, monster, kind of like what Zant did in Twilight Princess. Mm-hmm. So it would be more, and Skull Kid's the more iconic because he's the one, you know, mocking you and calling down the moon. So that's why.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that. I think Skull Kid'd be pretty sweet. He's already in as an assist trophy, but yep. That's, we can ignore that.
And then, of course, there's a one that I'm honestly I'm a little disappointed in us. I mean, I know we're varying levels of, you know, Zelda fan in here, but Tingle! Screw you, Tingle! You stay the heck out of my... You got an inclusion in the Majora's Mask level. That's all you get!
Yes.
Stay out of my game.
Oompa!
Kill Tingle.
Yeah, it's...
Why do your maps cost so much? Jerk.
Again, he's got to make some money somehow with all those balloons.
But we're supposedly fairy brothers. Like, that's... He keeps calling us, like, fairy brothers of whatever. And he's charging us that much for maps. Like, come on, man! Do your brother a solid. Do your fairy brother a solid. Come on! Tingle's not an assist trophy, is he?
He's not an assist trophy.
Okay, thank God.
No.
I didn't think so, but like, what would he do? I mean, he'd be like the Magikarp summon in Pokemon.
Yes, exactly. You
know? Well, to be fair, he does.
It's actually Goldeen too. Why is Goldeen the Pokemon that I know? It is. Right. It's just an odd thing that Goldeen.
I mean, to be fair, he can have a possible move that since he was in Hyrule Warriors. So there is.
Don't.
Yeah, yeah.
No. All right. If they put Tingle before my Midna, I will go. I will find the person who made that idea. And they will suffer. All right, and then I will get creative in the way I take it. I mean, I talk to them. Yeah, definitely don't mean kill. Totally no, definitely not. No, I will not rain down destruction upon them. That would be bad. Yeah. Anyway, with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler.
Yes, I think we did have a poll question last week.
Yeah, you probably aren't looking at it right
now. Excited to say that I'm pulling it up as we speak. Which fighting game franchise do you feel has the most unlikely guest fighters? 28% of you said Mortal Kombat, 50% said Smash Bros, 14% said Soul Calibur, and 7% said Tekken.
That's wow. I really would have thought Mortal Kombat would have taken it, but
yeah, we're a Nintendo podcast.
This is true.
Smash Bros.
This is true. I asked you all to be objective here. I mean, it's not that hard. Yes, it is. It's totally hard. All right. Well, for this podcast question, I'm going to reflect on the choices we just made. If you could add another Legend of Zelda character to Smash Brothers, who would it be? And let's do the three we picked, and then Impa. So Impa, Wolf Link and Midna, Daruk or Darunia, and then who did you say? Oh, Tetra. There you go.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Impa, Wolf Link and Midna, Daruk and Darunia, and Tetra. And oh my gosh, there's a lot of A's. Impa, Midna, Darunia, Tetra. So, it's just funny how things work out. All right. And if you dare say Tingle in the comments, you're disowned. Okay? I expect more from you. I expect more from you. And of course, let us know what you thought of everything else. How are you enjoying Minecraft Steve, if you are indeed enjoying him at all? Are you one that's going to get the Mario Kart Circuit toys? Are you looking forward to playing as Rain in Mortal Kombat 11? What do you think about the level 5 situation? And how much money did you give the Pokemon Company in 2019? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.